Dinner with the Divided Kingdom. This is August 24th, and we have the weekly news program with a cutting Christian edge. Nothing in this country has been the same since that infamous date, September 11, 2001, when the towers came down in New York. Firemen who heard explosives in the buildings contradicted the anti-inside job mantra that Islamic terrorists, largely incompetent pilots, according to their U.S. flight school representatives, crashed huge planes into the buildings. So many questions, so many lies. Can you imagine now if you had a child or grandchild who was 4 years old at 9/11 impact time? That child is now 20 years old and largely unaware of the grave danger as 4,000 American churches are closing every year. It's ironic that that's almost the same number of men who are going into Afghanistan shortly, 3,900 we hear. That child who may have graduated from high school and could in all probability not afford to even attend a community college no doubt lives in your basement, trying to find a modicum of freedom, self-respect, and non-existent purpose in the immersion of social media and celebrity rock culture. He or she cannot recall the face of what appeared to be Satan himself gloating in the smoke of Ground Zero. Your child or grandchild may never have heard, even if she or he attends church with you. Any contemporary minister state that judgment from God began on September 11, 2001. Such a concept is unknown and unknowable to the young who have been recruited by George Soros' evil Antifa thug protest movement. The others who were at Charlottesville who shouted about white supremacy and Jew hatred also have no clue what Christianity really means. A minister Lou and I heard recently gave a powerful sermon.
Yes, Elizabeth, he based the sermon on 1 Samuel chapter 4, verses 17 through 22. Here they are. And the messenger, and this is a messenger to Eli, answered and said, Israel is fled before the Philistines, and there has been also a great slaughter among the people. And thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken. And it came to pass, when he made mention of the ark of God, that Eli fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died, for he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. And his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women that stood by her said unto her, Fear not, for thou hast borne a son. But she answered not, neither did she regard it. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, The glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and husband.
Many of you listeners are part of the remnant. You will understand what this minister meant when he said, as he observed TV footage of young protesters kicking statues as they tore them down, he thought how dumb this was on the level of a five-year-old child, for statues have no power. The reprobate mind has taken over America with the legalization of same-sex marriage in 2015 and the silent acquiescence of most of the thousands of pastors in their churches in America to the expose videos of Planned Parenthood. These two issues, Lou and I believe, as do the few true churchmen, form the hugely vital to God's wrath abominations. So we see the continuing judgment, America's well-being of her people eroding a little more every week. Surprisingly, President Trump's key advisor, populist Stephen Bannon, resigned. This not long before General Kelly became chief of staff. And now we have the president's Afghanistan address delivered in what Fox News called halting tones. And to my ears, I heard a lot of strain, inability to get one's breath well. We need to pray for President Donald Trump, for his health, for his heart, for his body that is being maligned, because now that the Russian narrative failed miserably, now we hear some of the commentators coming out that he has dementia, and we're going to have that drumbeat for a while. We must remove him. Susan Estrich says we must get rid of him. All of these columnists everywhere are saying we must get rid of the president, and we do not agree very well at all with this Afghanistan move, and we hope that he does have it under control. We hope that he is going to go in and rout out some terrorists and end the thing quickly, but it may not be so. We don't know whether, as Alex Jones says, he is now going sideways a little bit or not, but at any rate, we will be getting into that just a little bit more shortly. But again, we're looking back at Charlottesville, and we can see there the media is just disingenuous. John Meacham, who I believe used to be the religion writer, I believe for Newsweek, not Time, he now had written a major article, American Hate, A History, in the latest issue of Time magazine. But what is alarming is this part right here. Those of you who are really truth seekers, and you are the people who are listening on shortwave, a lot of you are listening on shortwave, some of you on the internet, some of you who hear us on Liberty Works Radio Network, that's LWRN.net, and you can go there, you can find an app for your smartphone. You can hear us on Mondays at 5 p.m., The Divided Kingdom, Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m., and we have archival programs, too, at LWRN.net that you can hear later in the week. I believe Tuesday morning and on a Saturday you can hear some of our work. You can hear us on WWCR, Worldwide Shortwave. This is on Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, WWCR.com. Click on Transmitter 3 at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. It's just so important that we carry on the legacy of people like Dr. Stan Monteith, who is a very fair gentleman. And I say gentleman because he treated Lou and me very, very well, very fairly as a mentor. He encouraged me to publish my books, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked, Patriots Warning 2, Chaos and Chemtrails. And he reacted well when I noted a book that I thought was extremely ugly with anti-Semitism, The True Kind, the real Jew hatred. I called him, and that book disappeared. And I noted that he then told people not to come on his program if they were filled with Jew hatred, if they called in. I heard that myself. And I know that he interviewed Harold Gordon, who was an 11-year-old sent to Auschwitz, and he also interviewed our dear friend Anita Dittmann, who has turned 90 years old, her experiences under Hitler in a labor camp while her mother was in Theresienstadt, because her mother was Jewish. Anita's father was Aryan. So you can hear all of these denials. We have a listener who sent us $70 worth of books and materials. Some of them are very fine. They do talk about 9/11, the inside job. There are many things that are very good, but there is a book that perhaps we will talk about at a later time. When we get into things like Holocaust denial and the Holocaust industry, these things are really vile. And so we can see that some of these guys, these young guys, these right-wing guys, I don't even like to call them right-wing, because they have been brainwashed with all of these lies about the Holocaust and about what happened, and they love the Nazi regime. This is terrible. But on the other hand, we also have to know that Newsweek and Time are globalist publications, and Time magazine is masquerading here with this article by John Meacham. It's masquerading as seeking the justice and the truth for the black people, for anyone who's oppressed, and certainly our hearts go out to Heather Heyer's family. This shows what satanic chaos will do to take a life, because it's the culture of death that Satan wants. But at the same time, Time Magazine seems to be showing all of this nobility. We have this from John Meacham. Trump's behavior marks a major break from traditional Republican conservatism. For two generations, most Republicans labored to maintain distance from the party's extremists. The past four popularly elected Republican presidents all recognized in deeply personal terms how damaging the Birchers or the Bannonites could be, not only to their careers, but also their cause. Hold it. Did you hear what I heard? That was the John Birch Society. Those of you who have heard the key person for the New American Magazine, come on, Alex Jones, you know this is a good person. He's telling the true history of the John Birch Society. There is a conspiracy by the global elite, whoever is running them. There may be some Illuminati Jews. There certainly is Jesuit Vatican influence. There are so many Roman Catholics in our administrations. You just can't imagine. Captain Darrell Everhart made a list of them, and it's just overwhelming. You see, those of us who are Protestants and never want something like the Inquisition to come in, we must be alerted that the roots of this conspiracy could be right there at the Vatican. We're not saying they are. We don't know, because there's George Soros, immense power, immense billionaire power. But we know here that this is disingenuous, talking about that these presidents knew how damaging the Birchers, let me go on, or the Bannonites could be. This is John Meacham. Not only to their careers, but also their cause. Traditional conservatism, the kind championed by Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush, emphasizes individual liberty, equality, and economic mobility. Lou, when we were talking about the war in Iraq and we gave up all of our money and we struggled to get groceries, did you feel that we were supporting a wonderful kind of conservatism with George W. Bush?
I certainly did not. I thought that it was a waste. It has proved to be a waste, because much of what the United States did was undone by ISIS. Cities that cost an immense amount of money and a lot of American blood were just taken back by ISIS. Cities that had been taken over by the U.S. with a lot of money and blood spent were taken over by ISIS very quickly, in a matter of months. So all that blood, all that money, all that treasure was for nothing. And, of course, the entire premise of going into Iraq was that they had weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein was going to attack the West. We had better watch out. He probably helped to make the conspiracy that led to 9/11.
And all those babies that were supposedly killed in those incubators up there in Kuwait, that helped to bring us into war. All of these things were conspiratorial. And Meacham says, furthermore, quote, the relationship between Trump and the GOP has all, excuse me, he's quoting someone. He says, the relationship between Trump and the GOP has always been awkward, says Republican strategist Alex Conant. Quote, most GOP members of Congress are lifelong Republicans and movement conservatives. Trump is neither. Oh, yeah? Well, today we have the news that President Trump pardoned Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Do I hear some cheers? I hope so. He didn't even have a jury trial. No, he had an Obama-era judge. This is the fight for our lives. We realize that. We know that there's never been a time when there is more danger in America. And even though we're very troubled about this decision to go into Afghanistan, we know that Trump is on the right side more than the wrong, because I just opened the paper today, and how many did I see? Six editorials condemning him, asking to remove him. All of these vitriolic opposition statements, they mean something. If he were bad, they would now let him alone completely. And now when we're looking back at Charlottesville, Time magazine does have a picture. Strength in numbers. Unite the right activists from across the country gathered to protest the removal of a Confederate statue. Some of these guys do not look good. You would not want to let them in your living room, especially the big burly guy with the swastika tattoo on his bare chest. Some of the others, you can see that this kind of ugly, hateful racism is just the Ku Klux Klan redux. But does John Meacham tell us how the Ku Klux Klan began with the Democrats, with Andrew Jackson? We don't see a word of that. We never hear that the leftists are all the Democrats, practically, and they're influenced by George Soros. We don't hear that. Instead, we hear Nancy Pelosi congratulating Donald Trump on getting rid of Stephen Bannon. And she said, now there should be more fired. Do we really see what is involved with the left? Because they do want abortion. They want abortion on demand, like everything. Now, there is a rather interesting article here, going back again to Charlottesville. The hate groups no longer hiding behind sheets and hoods. This is Donald Lambrow writing on Monday, August 21st. And he says, Attorney General Jeff Sessions released a very tough statement of his own. The violence and deaths in Charlottesville strike at the heart of American law and justice, he said. When such actions arise from racial bigotry and hatred, they betray our core values and cannot be tolerated. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe had declared a state of emergency and then delivered this message to, quote, all the white supremacists and the Nazis who came to Charlottesville today, go home. You are not wanted in this great commonwealth. A shaken city manager, Maurice Jones, said that hate came to our town today in a way that we had feared, but we had never really let ourselves imagine would. But the white nationalist website, the Daily Stormer, which heavily promoted the rally, made it clear this week that it isn't folding its tent or going home. Their war is just getting started and going national. I hope that you heard that. We have to remember that back at the time of Timothy McVeigh's so-called crime at the Murrow Building, we had all that suppression of the Islamic accomplices, didn't we? We had a lot of things suppressed. We'll never know maybe completely what all the truth was about that. But what happened was the beginning again of the judgment. That was pre-judgment, I think, on our country. But we can hear this drumbeat. Their war is just getting started and going national. See, that's the Illuminati warning to us that we're not going to just have a summer of unrest. We're going to have something in the fall. It looks like a continuation of God's judgment on America as we go into the lengthening shadows of the fall darkness. But again, Donald Lambrow writes about the Daily Stormer, the white nationalist website, and it doesn't represent Lou and me. We are white, but we've taught African-American students all our lives. I've had Japanese friends. I've had Chinese friends. We had Philippine friends who were really of a nationality that was Chinese, at least the husband was. He was a wonderful young neonatal doctor. We do not look at any kind of racial supremacy as being anything except out of the pit of Satan's hell, the hatred involved. But here we have the Daily Stormer saying, we are going to start doing this nonstop across the country, read a recent post on the website. We are going to go bigger than Charlottesville. We are going to go huge. And again, is this unprovoked, unplanned, spontaneous? We mentioned the Murrow Building, and back at that time, there were some white supremacist enclaves, and it came out that a lot of the FBI was in there infiltrating or aiding those white supremacists. So who is aiding this group? How are they going to go national if they don't have help We're going to go huge. The Post further declared, we are now at war and threatened to, quote, take over the country, according to the Business Insider. That's when the web registration service GoDaddy, which registers domain names for 71 million websites around the world, had had enough and threw the Daily Stormer site out of its systems in the aftermath of the violence. The neo-Nazis who marched in Charlottesville chanted, Jews will not replace us. And Donald Lambrou says this is the ugly message of evil and hatred that these people are plotting to deliver throughout our country in their declared war on America. But Lambrou's article, good as it is, to condemn the insidious kind of Jew conspiracy Holocaust denial idea, what a lie that is. You know, no wonder singer Billy Joel lately, for some reason, wore a Jewish yellow star on his front and back. I think this was some kind of a statement. And the NWO has long used this mantra of the Jewish Zionist organization there at the top of everything. They've demonized the Jewish people to hide the true power hand of the Jesuits and the Illuminati heads and the royal families of Europe, the big companies, the bankers. But in this article of Lambrou's, there wasn't one mention of Antifa and George Soros. We know those people were there, too, at Charlottesville. Who is running this? Is this coming out of the UN, Peter Sutherland and George Soros financing and supporting the millions of Islamic military men going in, military age men going in to trample Europe? They want to do it here. They want to do it here. And again, I bring up Time magazine because there was also the take of John Grisham. Some of you have probably read some of his novels. He is a lawyer, and he's a longtime best-selling author. Lou, do you remember it was at The Client we went to see one time? Maybe. I think that's his title. I think we saw the movie version of it after we read the book. But what he noted, it was interesting because he lives there. He lives in Charlottesville. And he first talks about how there are lots of good people there, schools. He says good schools, lots of churches, parks, and a bustling, growing community that more or less revolves around one of the country's great public universities. And he says volunteerism is rampant and dozens of nonprofits hustle about solving problems and helping those in need. The town is surrounded by the estate and horse country of Central Virginia, where history and traditions are important. And he says change is important, too. The town has a vibrant music, theater, art, and literary culture, and so forth and so on. And then he talks about the weekend of August 12th, how Charlottesville was violated. And he says, who were these people? Ostensibly, they came here to unite the right, a nefarious idea that devolved into a call to action. They were upset because of the city council's controversial decision to remove a Confederate monument from a city park. Now, the interesting part is, he says, I seriously doubt even one in a thousand, and that's of these people who came in there, has read the Constitution or could name the Southern commander at the Battle of Shiloh. They waved their rebel battle flags, oblivious to the fact that Robert E. Lee told his men to put them away. And we think that must have been at Appomattox at the time of the surrender. We've heard wonderful things about Robert E. Lee. Lou, you remember when we toured his home?
Yes, it's a beautiful mansion right up above Arlington National Cemetery. And he was a fine man. I believe at his death he may have freed his slaves. Of course, by then they weren't slaves anyway, but I think he had that intention. But he was an honest and good man.
And I should clarify, I believe what we visited was in Virginia. It was a plantation. That might have been the plantation where he was born. Can you confirm that? Yes, you're saying yes, that's what it was. And we also heard from another source, I believe this was a listener, who said he taught a Sunday school class and it had little black children in it. So you see, he was sort of a victim, I think, of history. He had to choose. He had to choose between those people who were nearer to him in his own community and what he would do in battle for the country. there are good men, perhaps on the wrong side. And, of course, there were some issues that the South had about states' rights. But we also know that God Almighty could never permit mankind to enslave mankind. We were made with the breath of God. We have His image. We are made in His image, I should say. He would never let this go on in history. This had to be stopped. It was bad, but at the same time, we really don't like to see this beginning of taking down all the statues from history, whether or not they might be as egregious as Roger Taney here in Maryland. Governor Hogan asked for it to be taken down. He was the presiding judge over the Dred Scott case. So there are some people that really maybe don't deserve to be remembered in history, but Robert E. Lee did deserve to be remembered. George Washington had slaves. Thomas Jefferson, in this question, I believe Trump raised it, which is an honest question. Where are we going to stop with this? I was not happy when Obama had in Alaska. What was the mountain that he renamed? Do you Mount McKinley, he called it. What did he call it? I don't even know the new name.
The old Indian name.
The old Indian name, Lou says, but what was it? You don't remember? No, because all our lives, our tradition was Mount McKinley. And also, it honored a president, I believe, who was assassinated. Isn't that interesting? But anyway, Grisham, talking about what's going on there in his town that was violated, he said that when a few Klansmen showed up a month ago, they attracted hundreds of counter-protesters who drowned them out. With an impressive show of peaceful resistance, Charlottesville proved it has no tolerance for hate. Now, look what happened next. He says, that incident was well reported and no doubt inspired the Unite the Right Brain Trust to plan an even bigger event. They issued the call, and their comrades came from far and wide to make trouble. They now claim they were provoked while trying to assemble peacefully, but the real provocation was their hate-filled message. Do you not read between the lines, Lou, that these were outside paid protesters to come?
Definitely sounds that way. It sounds like that they were outsiders, not Charlottesville people, but outside provocateurs who were trying to stir up trouble. And, of course, they did. We can see the results.
The other big event of the week, of course, was the eclipse. And Lou, I was kind of worried about him, whether he might do something dangerous to his eyes, but I shouldn't have worried because he has such a good science background. But he was there trying to make his pinhole on a piece of paper, and he first used a paper clip, and it was a little bit ragged, and he didn't think he had a very good image. And then he asked me for a pin, so I went hunting for a safety pin, and he tried it, but it really wasn't quite as good. And then, you know, finally, I couldn't resist. I had to look at that little pinhole, because he said the one that he made with the paperclip was superior. And there it was. I could see the little crescent moon at the bottom of the sun. It was really neat. It was neat. But I'm sure there were much more grandiose images of the thing itself. But again, we're in a world that's changing. I believe that we heard that same pastor who gave that talk about Ichabod, the Spirit of God being gone. He said, I believe that there are 4,000 American churches closing every year. So when we look for any kind of moral sustenance, we're only going to find human ideas. And the humanities. My college said arts and humanities, and that's all we have. We don't have the Christian God. So this was from Bloomberg. This was from globalist billionaire Bloomberg's Bloomberg View. And it shows us a godless view of the world and creation, a world in which only numbers and communal caring can save us. After what happened in Charlottesville, we also looked in our local paper, and there we had all the interfaith people. We had the local rabbi, we had the local representative of Islam, and we had mostly the Unitarian Universalist minister, and we had the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America local church pastor, and we recall what happened with that. Nationally, when Pastor Carl Sanders, our late friend, told us about the tornado, I think, going down the street and turning around, coming right back to where they had legitimized homosexual clergy in the ECLA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, and it struck, lightning struck the church. This is what God thinks. But here we have just the classical allusions to the eclipse from Blueberry View. Herodotus described it plainly enough. The sun left his place in the heaven and was invisible, though there was no gathering of clouds and the sky was perfectly clear, and instead of day, it became night. Eclipses have preoccupied the Greeks and Romans, Chinese and Assyrians, Amos and Joel. Well, gosh, there was an actual biblical example. I hadn't seen that before. Gilmore and Waters. They've signified different things in different eras. Foreboding, good fortune, prefiguration. Across cultures, though, an eclipse has always been freighted with meaning, a sight so vivid and unsettling that it must portend something important. Perhaps that's still true. And this was in an arc some 70 miles wide from Oregon to South Carolina. And he said it has become a monumental happening. And this was before it happened. He said millions of people are gathering, along with hopes of economic revival and fears of epic traffic jams, like Woodstock 200 times over, says a NASA official. Why such a frenzy in these harried times for a two-minute event? On one level, it's simply a great show. As the moon passes in front of the sun, the planets and stars will emerge. The solar corona will flicker overhead. Temperatures will plummet. Animals will freak. People may scream. For an instant, the whole mad clockwork of the universe will reveal itself. As the astronomer Jay Pasichoff once put it, an eclipse, quote, is the perfect alignment in solemn darkness of the celestial bodies that mean most to us. And then we have to get the political mantra here. He says something more worldly is at work, too. As you've no doubt noticed, these are dark days in national life, days of rage and resentment. The worst are full of passionate intensity. A communal act unburdened by politics has a forceful appeal amid the turmoil. And he goes on to say that an eclipse is just an eclipse, of course. It won't solve America's deepening dysfunctions, but perhaps in drawing so many together, it can offer a reminder of common bonds long forgotten. As millions of Americans look up, if only momentarily, from their phones, maybe they can also look beyond the pettiness of so much of their politics. Among a crowd of strangers gazing at the unnerving splendor above, they might find a brief moment of grace. This is a little G grace. This is not grace from Jesus Christ. We do not have a witness of that. But there could be something else going on. Lou has something, a brilliant analysis here from a listener.
And quoting our listener, he said, wrote to us, consider the solar eclipse. When a road sign or other sign is a circle with a diagonal line drawn through it, it means no. God is drawing a line, a diagonal line, across the United States with the eclipse. Is it a sign of coming events?
Again, as Christians, watchmen that we are, we have to again bring out the theme of judgment on America. And part of this judgment may be war again. We're just not happy at all about all of this. You know, when we think about this Charlottesville issue, statues of the historical past, Robert E. Lee, Roger Taney, that implementing judge in the Dred Scott decision, none of these dead men mean a hill of beans. But our living leaders do have the power to continue the satanic goals of the New World Order. In reaction to Trump's announcement to send more troops to Afghanistan, Senator Lindsey Graham suddenly began to effusively extol the leader, Trump, he had reviled so much before, even mentioning how pleased both he and Senator John McCain, Hotel Hanoi, and Ukraine destabilization force McCain was. Patriot analyst Pascoe on Alex Jones stated what we were not aware of, the claim that Eric Prince, brother of Betsy DeVos, had actually helped in the breaking up of a pedophilia ring. Maybe there was a good side hidden in that offer for his company, Z, or Blackwater, whatever he calls it now, that he was going to take an independent force into Afghanistan. But Pascoe said Prince was not even permitted to be in the Camp David discussions. There were only two alternatives allowed: pull out, send in more troops. We watched Fox News, and there was a woman, an analyst from the Pentagon, and she said, in contrast to the president's hopeful scenario of eventually winning over the Taliban, that when we already had 100,000 troops there, we couldn't do it. No. Lou, I think it's time to bring back Jim Hightower's column.
That's right, Elizabeth. Hightower says in the article entitled "Another Surge in Our Longest War," President Trump might have dodged military service in his youth, but he certainly is militaristic. He's bellicose, likes to issue commands, and is constantly firing off militant tweets at anyone he perceives to be an enemy, which seems to include everyone who dares to disagree with him. Meanwhile, he and his White House, full of military commanders, are pondering the launch of a real shooting war, a military offensive that would be known as Trump's War. Actually, he'd be attempting to achieve battlefield glory by picking up and extending what at first was Bush's war, then Obama's war. The place is Afghanistan, and the strategy is to shove another 5,000 or so American soldiers, none of whom will be named Trump, into that brutish hellhole. Yes, that mess is still boiling, despite President Obama's 2012 pledge to end our involvement in the longest war in U.S. history. After 16 years, and after more than 2,300 Americans killed, 20,000 others maimed, and more than $800 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars spent on it, 8,400 of our troops are still there. The killing continues, and we taxpayers keep pumping $3 billion a month into the insanity. For all of that, the Taliban forces we've been trying to defeat are stronger than ever, and the Afghan government we're supporting is as corrupt, inept, and despised as ever. Nevertheless, Trump is violating a basic rule of civilian control of the military. Never ask the generals if they need more resources. This president has surrounded himself with generals and surrendered crucial decision-making authority to them. We weren't able to win in Afghanistan when 100,000 of our troops were there. So what do we win in quotes, by putting 5,000 more soldiers in harm's way? Other than the more casualties, if Trump can't tell us that, we should tell him, no way. That was by Jim Hightower.
Yes, what is the real truth about this? Dr. Steve Pachenik, again on Alex Jones' program, August 23rd, reminded the audience that they might not know that over 80 generals left in recent years, and they were part of what, listeners, we call the revolving door. They went into wonderful war profiteer company largesse. Yes, after their service for our country, then they are rewarded. We have a very corrupt system, and Pachenik said that, sadly, Steve Bannon was a good counterforce to show Trump the reality. Instead of relying on, quote, his generals, we would say, no, we wonder what we have been put into. We heard the president's Afghanistan address delivered in what Fox News called halting tones. And even more worrisome was this military-industrial complex. The war propaganda, so alive and so much like the pre-Iraq invasion, how we have these great young warriors and all wonderful, how their valiant sacrifice is to bring democracy to the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And always in the background, we hear the cynic realist voice saying, yeah, but remember that key globalist, I think it was Dr. Henry Kissinger, referring to this cannon fodder as dumb farm animals. This is not what God wants. No, these statues of the historical past, as I said, none of these dead men mean a hill of beans. But what's going to happen to these men going into Afghanistan? Patriot analyst Paskovic on Alex Jones, of course, was not for this. And we had this, what we said, the two-fold decision, pull out or send more troops. And then, as a follow-up, we've now heard that there won't be 4,000 troops. Oh, such blindness, unless Trump really does control, quote, his generals, and will do a quick military action to kill terrorists the way Mosul was freed from ISIS. If that's not the case, we are in for many more years of a quagmire in the land of the poppy fields, guarded by our troops, understood well by martyr Pat Tillman, who was killed by, quote, friendly fire before he could come home to the U.S. and be a whistleblower. Cleverly, this MSM, the mainstream media, is reporting these 3,900 troops will be sent initially, when all the assumptions the night of the president's address were for 4,000 men to be sent. This is just like merchants pricing their items at $9.98 rather than $10. They think we're so stupid. But you see, we have to know something, that most Americans, Mr. and Mrs. America, Lou and I sort of symbolize all of you because we are ordinary middle-class people. But God called us to be watchmen many, many years ago. Some of you have heard the story, and you know, I myself hadn't thought about it lately till about a week ago this summer. I said, Lou, remember, he lived in a bachelor apartment down the hall from me. We were both teachers, and we had gotten acquainted, but we were not yet dating. And I went into his apartment, and the telephone rang, and he went out to his kitchen to answer it. And while he was gone, I was standing looking at his books, and he has some beautiful-looking editions. Now, I don't mean all leather-bound. We're not Bill Gates. We're not Warren Buffett. We're just Lou and Elizabeth Caverly. So these were kind of nice editions. They had some red and blue and black bindings on them, history books. I remember that one was Carl Sandburg's History of Lincoln. There were others, I think some World War II books. And as I stood there looking at the books, and this was kind of a barren bachelor's living room, he had kind of a cheap Sears Roebuck set of like a chair and a sofa, but they weren't really very plush. They had a wood backing. They wouldn't have been very comfortable to sit on. And he had some wrought iron bookshelves, other shelves, I think. Anyway, as I looked at the books, it was like just a beautiful golden light peacefully surrounded the books, and a very peaceful spirit came into my soul, and it was as if I saw the words on a stone, or I heard them. I didn't really hear a voice, but I knew what the words were. This is your destiny. And I chuckled this summer when it came back to me, because I was an English major in college, and I always wanted to write. I wrote some poetry. I wrote other things. But history was a little more of a struggle for me in those days. I could get B's, but I couldn't get A's. I could get all my A's in the English literature, but it's as if everything came full circle. My true interest now is in the history. I could go back now. I'm sure I could make some A's. But you see, I would have to pretend that I believe the whole standard lies that were put into American history with everything suppressed. No, we wouldn't hear about the Jesuit role in the Civil War. A lot of you in the South need to really wake up. There was a lot more going on than states' rights. Absolutely. You need to go back to our archives, thedividedkingdom.org. I think everything's getting pretty well up to date now there. And look for programs by Captain Darrell Eberhard. He can tell you a lot more about it. But at any rate, we are here because we care about our country. We don't want to see, number one, Jesus Christ disappear from our civilization. What will happen to the youth? You know, we are older people now. We want the next generation to have the hope of Jesus. We know he has been faithful to us in our lives through all kinds of things, 7 years of joblessness, practically two years of terrible suffering with Lyme disease, lupus, kidney stones, all kinds of things have hit us. Family problems and worries, financial troubles. So whatever you think is wrong out there, you know that you can take this power into your hands to pray to Jesus and ask him to cast Satan out. If Satan is attacking you, you must do this, and you must believe that he will help you, because he will. But as we see this kind of decay and chaos going on, what we're saying is Mom and Pop America are not going to go out there and raise hell there like in Charlottesville. Most people will not be incited into civil war. We heard a ridiculous mainstream journalist on the Alex Jones show yesterday quoted that Trump is inciting civil war. That could not be farther than the truth. The truth is the relentless far left. And let's hear from Lou what Gary Kaw said in Hope for the World Update, summer of 2017. And you really ought to subscribe to this. This is a very wonderful publication. It's about $50 a year, I think, or $45. Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899, Noblesville, Indiana, 46061, 0899. Again, that's Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899, Noblesville, Indiana, 46061, 0899.
In the current American political climate, you can count on one thing. The ferocious attacks on the Trump administration will continue. The far left will regroup from its recent setbacks and employ other tactics and schemes to try to take down the president. They will continue to obstruct any attempts by conservatives to make America great again, restore America's freedoms, Judeo-Christian values, and common-sense government. The spirit which is driving the far left is demonic. I don't mean this in a rhetorical sense. I mean this literally. We're in an all-out spiritual war. The evil powers steering the far left seek to weaken and destroy America's foundations in order to force our country into their envisioned new world order. This includes redefining our family units, promoting sexual perversion, encouraging immoral, rebellious behavior, feeding racial tensions, destroying our free enterprise system, shredding our Constitution, attacking the legitimacy of our Christian faith, and even directly mocking God. Their strategy also involves getting the United States into a military conflict with Russia by fueling instability in the Middle East, hoping this will trigger a wider conflict between the superpowers. We need to remind ourselves of why these forces are destabilizing the U.S. and the rest of the world. The fact is, the most determined globalists on the far left are of the view that they can move their agenda forward most expeditiously through crisis situations. If the world is functioning fairly normally, people are not inclined to consider major changes because they have no reason to do so. However, if the world appears to be falling apart, seemingly going to hell in a handbasket, then people would be more likely to accept drastic changes promising to protect their way of life. Therefore, according to the leftist mindset, the more crises they can generate, the closer they will get to achieving their goals. Their favorite crisis triggers are racially oriented uprisings, manipulating environmental issues involving climate change, creating economic instability with the threat of collapse, and fueling wars through terrorism and other strategic maneuvers. From a satanic perspective, it would be best if crises are brewing in all of these areas simultaneously. This would produce a world in absolute chaos, ready to embrace an extreme, quote-unquote, solution in the name of restoring order. Many years ago, Albert Pike, the leader of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, described a distant final war, which he felt would be necessary to usher in the new world order. According to Pike, the conflict between the two future superpowers would be sparked by first igniting a crisis between Islam and Judaism. He went on to write, quote, "We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a great social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to all nations the effect of absolute atheism, the origin of savagery, and of most bloody turmoil. Then, everywhere, the people, forced to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization. And the multitudes, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will be, from that moment on, without direction or leadership, anxious for an ideal, but without knowledge where to send its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out into the public view, a manifestation which will result from a general reactionary movement, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. And that was from a letter from Albert Pike to the Italian revolutionary leader Giuseppe Mazzini, written in 1871, and it was cataloged in the British Museum in London for many years. Gary Carr goes on to say, it appears that we are getting closer and closer to such a scenario. The powers that be have been setting the stage over the last few decades for a climactic war in the Middle East. In my view, they are currently in the process of forcing Donald Trump's back to the wall in such a way that he seemingly has no choice than to engage in war. If he is drawn into this trap, all of the resulting carnage would be blamed on him and the conservative right who voted him into power. It would lead to a huge backlash against Christianity in favor of hyper-liberal globalism that would be useful toward ushering in the Luciferic one-world system envisioned by Pike and warned of in Scripture. See Revelation 13 and 14. Apart from the explosive Mideast region, the Baltic states, Ukraine, China, and North Korea, Apart from the explosive Mideast region, the Baltic states, Ukraine, China, and North Korea are some of the other potential triggers that Trump has to contend with. What to do? Most of Washington's bureaucrats and opposition leaders are people of depraved hearts and minds, no longer knowing right from wrong. They become conduits for evil and are defiant toward the Lord God. There is a place reserved for such perverse politicians and the unrepentant anti-Christian hordes allied with them. That place is very hot and has no air conditioning. Unless they repent of their detestable ways and turn to Jesus Christ for mercy, accepting him as their true Lord and Savior, there is no hope for them in eternity. Therefore, as much as we dislike their wicked agenda and see them as enemies, we must genuinely pray for their salvation. We should not wish eternal damnation on anyone, but should pray even for those who hate and persecute us, that they would be broken and come to Christ. See Matthew 5, 43 through 45. There are also many, I'd say most, on the right who are lost as well. They might have a measure of common sense and a moral foundation that was passed on to them by Christian parents or grandparents, but they do not have a personal relationship with Jesus. We must pray for these individuals that they would not put their faith in self-reliance and good works, but rather would humble themselves and place their trust in God, seeing their need for forgiveness and mercy from a loving Creator. As for Donald Trump, he needs to stand strong on biblical principles, choose his words more carefully, speaking with dignity, stop making foolish remarks, and avoid traps that the far left is laying for him. He especially needs to walk consciously in his dealings with Israel involving the pursuit of Mideast peace. The prophet Zechariah issues a stern warning to those who tamper with Jerusalem. See Zechariah 12:3. The consequences are also dire for anyone who divides the land. See Joel 3:1-2 and 12-17. Pray for President Trump that he would heed the advice of his most discerning Christian advisors on this and other sensitive matters. He needs incredible wisdom and self-control to navigate through the corruption of Washington and the mess he has inherited from the previous administrations of the last few decades. Meanwhile, Christians must use this temporary reprieve from a deep state regime to get their houses in order. Wise individuals see a storm coming and prepare for it. God in his mercy is giving us more time, but we don't know how much. So let's be active in speaking out for the Lord and spreading his truth. Let's use our remaining freedoms for God's glory and not squander this opportunity to inform and evangelize a world that is morally bankrupt and spiritually enslaved, looking for hope and fulfillment in all the wrong places. Remember, we are the ones with the good news. The darker the world around us, the brighter our lights will shine. We are Christ's ambassadors in this fallen world. We must never stop pointing the way to Him.
And if you appreciate this Watchman program, we do need some help from listeners, even a $5 bill, a $20 bill, a money order. We cannot take checks made out to Lou or Elizabeth Caverly, but you could help us if you wish to. And our address, it's Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, that is P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. A few of you have helped us this month, and we are deeply appreciative. And we do say that we must pray very much that Afghanistan will not be a continuation of the great evils. We see it coming back on all of our young people, the suicides from the heroin overdoses, all of this opioid crisis, it's just terrible, hitting many states, hitting Pennsylvania, hitting Maryland. Why do we have this? Well, our leaders are guarding those poppy fields. When we do evil, evil will boomerang right back on us. And we wonder if this quagmire is worth it. We can't go impose Christian civilization into all the culture that God has brought forth in Britain and in America. We can't go impose that on other cultures who don't know Jesus and who are more barbaric. We're kidding ourselves if we don't know that Trump's immigration policy is our lifeline, our very lifeline for the future here in America. Lou has something very important the next time we talk about all of this to shock us what Afghanistan was like in the 1930s. It sounds like it could have been Charlottesville, Virginia yesterday. No, certain things are not going to change. You know, Jesus said, the poor ye have with ye always. We didn't want those churches in England to close. We didn't want France to turn away from God. We didn't want Europe to be crumbling. Spain used to be a very Roman Catholic Christian country. All of this is going into secularism and man's hubris. We had the book, The Harbinger, that we've talked about quite a bit, former rabbi and messianic preacher, Jonathan Kahn, wrote about it. Yes, September 11th. We look at Isaiah 9:11. Look at the numerology of those two things. Do you see it? We will rebuild the hubris and the pride. We'll be rebuilding better than ever. Tom Daschle said it. John Edwards, presidential candidate, said it. None of them said we need to repent. We need sorrowful remorse here in America for same-sex marriage policies being made official, for the abortion of those little babies. Until we have the pastors and the churches arise, hundreds of thousands of them, to change this Planned Parenthood, we're going to see judgment continue. Maybe that judgment is the continuing quagmire in Afghanistan. I pray that we're wrong. I pray that Trump intends to get in, take out some terrorists, and stop the war. You keep us in prayer, keep our country in prayer, and we love and pray for all of you. Good night.